This is URN.
Hello, and you are listening to The Identity Talk. Today, we are going to be having our LGBTQ plus religion special. We have been joined by a gorgeous throng of guest panellists with us today. To start off the introductions, as we do every episode, my name is Ant, and my pronouns are she and her. I would consider myself an agnostic, but I was also Catholic at one point in my life.
And hi, my name's Will. My pronouns are he and him, and I am an atheist.
Hello, my name is Aviv. My pronouns are they, them, and I am a liberal Jew.
Hi, my name is Tuk. My pronouns are she, her, and I am Muslim.
Hi, my name is Dan. My pronouns are she, her, and I am a Christian.
Hi, my name is Ellie. My pronouns are her and she, and I'm Christian.
Hi, I'm Donnie. Not really part of this show, but kinda. And my pronouns are they and them, and I'm a deist.
Donnie, would you care to just explain to the audience what a deist is?
I will try. So deism is essentially a non-religious kind of belief in a higher being, whether that be God or not. So yeah, that's essentially what it is. Oh, and also, you don't believe in having any personal relations. So for example, you don't pray or think, a personal relationship with the higher being.
Okay, very, very interesting. Now, a few disclaimers before we begin the show.
So we are acutely aware that we've not covered all intersections. We reached out to the Nottingham LGBT plus community and we were very grateful for the responses we had. So we're just going to be focusing on the intersections we have represented here in the studio, but please do feel free to message in and contribute regardless of intersection. And as well, in the show today, we don't want to be making any sweeping statements or generalisations about anyone based on these intersections. So we're just going to be going off what you guys say and what you want to contribute.
Again, we do want as much audience participation as possible, so do message us with any messages as the show progresses. So just a quick opening statement before we begin the show. I was particularly excited to plan and host this special because I really think that there isn't very much representation of the lives of spiritual or religious queer people. There seems to be a general misconception or lack of knowledge on the intersection between spiritual and religious identity and LGBT identity. They often inform both of these sections of our identity, often inform our life experiences, and in many cases can be linked to how we perceive the world and our place in it. So we're also going to be talking about things like how religious spaces and communities interact with LGBT communities and LGBT spaces. We're going to be talking about reconciling our identities with each other. But just to mainly start off a question, I would like to just open up the floor by asking all of you about your experiences as queer people of faith.
I would like to begin. I grew up in the liberal Jewish community, and so that's always been quite an open-minded community with regards to LGBTQ plus matters. In fact, when I was very, very young, my mum's a convert, which is partly why we're liberal, because in Jewish law, in more Orthodox communities, you're considered Jewish if your mother is Jewish, but like in liberal Judaism, it's either parent. And so my mum converted when I was very young, and I was blessed by a rabbi who was a lesbian, and she came along to my bat mitzvah with her partner. And it's very much treated as normal in the liberal Jewish community, and there's a lot of acceptance. And in fact, I'm part of a youth group within the community, and it's always been incredibly accepting. And in fact, I remember running sessions when I was leading on a spring camp. I was leading children ages 7 to 9, and I did a session on gender and gender identity. And it's just really, really open, and gender roles go completely out the window. For example, the leaders will be painting the boys' nails and the boys will just go around and look how cool my nails are. And it's absolutely wonderful. And I think liberal Judaism was one of the first, I can't remember, religious kind of denominations in the UK to offer ceremonies for same-sex marriage. I'm not entirely sure if that's correct. I think it is. And so I've always felt quite welcome in the community. So yeah, there have been like a couple of incidents with my kind of relatives who are more kind of Orthodox. For example, my granny, she's kind of openly against gay marriage, and that upsets me quite a lot because it means I'd never be able to come out to her as bisexual without facing backlash from her. And I'm not sure what my grandpa thinks. He's a really chill guy. He just kind of cares about carpentry and Scrabble. But so yeah, I don't want to ramble on, but that's kind of the base, the very, very basics of my experiences.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Aviv. Anyone else?
I'll go next. I was raised in an atheist family, but my primary school was very heavily Christian, in the kind of old Welsh tiny primary school kind of Christian. But we were taught very much the kind of love your neighbour, love your friends, take care of your family, and then kind of God takes care of the rest. So there wasn't really any kind of stigma that I faced. I mean, I didn't come out as bi to myself until I was 18 or something like that. But that wasn't anything to do with my religion. That was because I had a long-term partner who was a cis male, and just never considered any other possibilities, I guess. But my church leader, he was always very accepting and very open about the fact that, you know, God kind of welcomes anyone, and it doesn't matter where you're from, how you identify, it just kind of, God makes you for who you are, and that's it, kind of thing. The only kind of discrimination that I ever indirectly faced was, I had a couple of people in my church talk a lot about how they didn't understand gay people, and how, like, it wasn't ever openly aggressive, it's just something that they couldn't comprehend. They were very, very of the mindset that, you know, marriage was in a church between a man and a woman, and that was kind of it. They weren't necessarily openly homophobic, but they just kind of didn't understand what that lifestyle, as they would term it, sort of was consisted of.
Okay, thank you so much, Ellie. Anybody else?
I'm also a Christian. I think I've faced... I haven't overtly faced discrimination against myself, because I'm not really out to most of my religious friends, but those to whom I am out to were very accepting. But I have definitely realised that church is less accepting of LGBT people than the general university is, and I know of people who do not agree with space quotes LGBT lifestyles, and that's obviously discomforting, that the religion which I believe in wholeheartedly, they don't recognize me and the rest of the people here as having an identity which is God, well, I believe God given, as opposed to a choice or whatever they think it is. And as Ellie was just saying, I believe that God accepts everyone, but I have had the experience of people making derogatory remarks against everyone, and that's hard to cope with. But also there have been lovely, lovely Christians who do believe that God accepts everyone, and so there's definitely a wide variety of different Christians in the world.
So I'll go next. Like I said, I'm Muslim, and I think that my experience has been quite similar to what Ellie was saying about the religious community having a lack of understanding rather than outright aggressive or horrible comments. I came out and then ended up leaving home almost immediately after, so I didn't really have the experience of coming out to my family, but that's because I knew that my family were quite homophobic. So but I think that in terms of, I think the original question was, what's your experience been as an LGBT person of faith? So I think that overall I've had an easier experience coming out to my Muslim friends than coming out to friends who've not grown up as Muslim or faith backgrounds, or actually, yeah, faith backgrounds but not Muslim. That's been where the most difficulty has been, just because of like prejudices and assumptions and yeah.
Would you feel comfortable elaborating on that? Or
yeah, I think that obviously I think that the generation of my parents and, yeah, that people of their age, there's a lack of understanding. But I think that with people of my generation, they're just very more tolerant. And even if they don't understand, there's not necessarily that prejudice there. Whereas with, it's usually been white people who are not of any faith, then they would be making assumptions about how my family reacted or how my community is, or you know, the assumption that I hate my religion or I hate my culture just because of the fact that I've come out. So, I mean, I used to wear the headscarf as well, but the reason that I took it off was not really to do with hating the religion. It was more to do with me feeling that it had a lot of cisnormative and heteronormative foundations to it. So that was like a personal thing of principle rather than, oh, you know, I hate my religion now, I've come out, so I'm just going to distance myself in every way. So
it's more of a personal choice as opposed to what other people might perceive to be some sort of religious oppression, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, like I said, the most difficulty has been with people's prejudices rather than my actual culture, and that's what has made me seek like spaces of LGBT people of colour or people of faith, and just anything away from where I'm going to feel like I have to explain my existence or you know, why I choose to identify still as being Muslim and why I've not distanced myself from it. So, yeah.
Hi guys. Again, I'm Donny. I identify as a deist, which means that, again, I don't believe in having a personal relationship with God. So basically my story is, I'm of Persian descent. Both of my parents are from Iran. So I am born as a Muslim, but the thing was, obviously being raised in Britain, my parents basically said to me, you know, we don't want to force any religion on you. We want you to go out there, explore other religions out there and see for yourself, you know, what you believe in and why. And I want you to come back to us and tell us, you know, what you think. So my parents were kind of very open in that respect. They call themselves a liberalist, which is great. So I kind of, you know, went about, you know, was really interested in like religious studies at school, and you know, we dabbled in a few religions here and there. I looked at some of my own interests and I realized, you know, I do believe that there is a God out there, because I was raised, you know, with phrases such as, you know, well, religious language that includes the word God, and for me, I always felt that there was someone out there, but I didn't necessarily know whether I could pray or whatever. So for my, in my experience, it was more that I had a choice regardless. So to come out as deist, which my parents then turned around and said, you know what, us too, which was quite a nice moment. But in my experience, people kind of, they don't really understand kind of how some, I haven't really had much abuse, but I guess given where I'm from, people would just automatically assume, oh, so does that mean that you can't then come out to your family? Do your parents not know about your gender identity or your sexuality? Whereas actually there were the first, you know, like Tuck, those who were closest to me, I found I could come out to, especially with my gender pronouns, because where I'm from, you know, it's, there's a lot of oppression on women, and it's a very kind of, is it a binary kind of culture, you know, men, yeah, women, despite the language itself possessing genderless pronouns. But yes, that's my experience. I haven't really found any discomfort in what I identify as such.
Hello everyone, I'm EB. As you can tell, this is a really packed studio today. Mm-hmm. My pronouns are he and him. I'm usually one of the speakers on the show, but today I'm taking on a much more, I'm stepping back and doing a production role, so you won't be hearing from me later on. I do just want to build on something that Will said earlier, in that we're extremely grateful to the panelists who've been able to come on today. But obviously, as Will mentioned, there are some religious faiths and religious intersections that are not being explored. One that I very, very, very quickly want to touch on, not from experience of being of that same faith, but having grown up in that culture, is that of Hinduism. And something that a lot of people sometimes forget, particularly today, is how Hinduism celebrates gender fluidity and how Hinduism celebrates sexuality in its religious texts. I'm only pointing this out as to kind of also bring in the fact that there are also religions that are non-Abrahamic that do touch on, in some ways, gender and sexuality. And although we won't be going into that from personal perspectives today because of whom we've been able to get onto the panel, I just wanted to very quickly point that out so that those who may be listening today who do represent other religions or who feel strongly with regards to identifying with other religions, please do feel free to message in and share your experiences as well.
Just sort of leading off something that was raised earlier, is the whole divide within Christianity between those who maybe don't understand the LGBT community and those who are either allies or part of the community themselves, is that a lot of the time when they're using passages from the Bible in order to justify their homophobic claims, they're actually using passages from the Old Testament, which is not something that Christianity is supposed to follow. The Old Testament is there to show how messed up humans are without, in terms of their societal links and that kind of thing, and how we quote unquote need a God to kind of show us what to do. Whereas the New Testament is kind of, Jesus is now here and you have someone to follow, and then kind of morality comes from that. So when they're taking things out of the Old Testament, that's not part of Jesus's preachings, and that's not something that they should, in my opinion, identify with as a Christian. There's a passage in Matthew, which is in the New Testament. I'm not going to quote it for sake of brevity, but it basically says that God is the only person who can judge. So if you as humans are not allowed to judge other people because that would be in fact playing God, and you just are not allowed, you're not allowed to do that. So it really actually infuriates me when I see Christians using that, because I basically have that verse kind of on a Word document and I copy and paste it every single time when I see that on the internet, because it's just, it's not accurate and it's not representative, and it makes me feel really sad.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Ellie. So I really want to say thank you to all of you for sharing your experiences with us. Just so that everyone listening is aware, we do have the LGBT network and the other welfare networks such as Nightline and the Night Owls, plus the LGBT switchboard for support. So if you're listening and you have in any way felt conflict between these sections of your identity and you need someone to talk to about it, please by all means get in touch with anyone that you trust. Just before we move on to a song break, I believe Will has a quick question. We're also going to take some messages that we've had in before we continue.
So we did just have a really interesting message in, but before we go on to that, I just wanted to ask Aviv, you mentioned about how you're a liberal Jew, and you know that it does what it says on the tin, really. You know, it's a very liberal form of Judaism, but I was just wondering, for the benefit perhaps of listeners who don't know much about it, could you put that into some sort of context, like how that contrasts with more orthodox forms of Judaism?
Well, liberal Judaism is a section of Judaism. I think it came about, it kind of flourished in kind of the 20th century, like late 19th, early 20th, and from what I recall, it kind of came about with a need for Judaism to kind of shift with the times, so people could still practice as Jews in the more modern environments that they were living in. And so I guess that's how it contrasts orthodoxy. It's much kind of more relaxed with kind of one's interpretation of the texts and the way you live your life. For example, like a lot of the kids that come on the summer camp I went to, and on the summer camp which I led last year, and I'm actually leading again this year, which I'm very, very excited about, there are a lot of kids that don't keep kosher at home, and though like to keep Jewish dietary laws, for example, like not eating pork, and there are some that do. So to kind of solve this whole problem, the kind of camp is, the food is completely vegetarian to solve any conflict. So basically liberal Judaism is like kind of about keeping kind of making, for me, it's always been about making Judaism more personal to you and kind of updating it to kind of go with the times, so just as meaningful as it always was. And of course, my feeling is that things just have to shift and evolve over time. So that's how it's always been for me.
I think that's a really useful point to make, because for a lot of people, bringing religion or bringing faith into what people might call the 21st century not only makes it more accessible, but it increases its relevancy, because we can all, I guess, I would like to think we could all agree that movements do have to adapt and change over time to accommodate different kinds of people. Religion has been used in the name of many atrocities that have been committed throughout history, but that doesn't necessarily, mate or unite this kind of cause with the people that belong to that faith. So I personally would agree on that point, in that when we see religious movements being brought into the 21st century, being accommodating to people who may have been ignored in the past, like trans individuals, LGBT individuals, individuals with disabilities, like, I think that's really interesting, because for a lot of people, religion is not some kind of backward concept that is regressive. It's about bringing tradition and applying it into what we individuals experience today. Just a quick look at the messages that we've had in before we go to the song. We have had some messages in for Tuck, saying that, one, Tuck is bang on about the discrimination LGBTQ Muslims face within the LGBTQ community. Racism and Islamophobia is rampant. There is also another message saying, much love and respect to Tuck and all QTPOX, which is queer, trans, intersex, people of colour, of faith, who have to deal with white supremacy, racism and Islamophobia. So Tuck, what you did touch on earlier is being very much echoed by our audience, and how I think that's a very important point to make as well, given that what we mainly, a lot of cultures that we may not be intimately familiar with may be sort of alienized or perceived as inherently regressive. I know that a lot of the rhetoric floating around about religion being, or maybe definitely Islamophobia at the moment, being this oppressive religion, it's just, I think it's really important that we have people on this show who are bringing it into the limelight and saying, well, no, actually, let's dispel all these myths now and really have a conversation that is applicable and important.
Thank you for all the texts that you've been sending in to us. We've had a really lovely one, which reads, today's talk has been mind-blowing. As a regular listener, I believe that great patience is going to be essential. The rest of the world will evolve to understand, accept... the wider world will accept, understand and support gender issues that the LGBTQ plus world leads. Be a servant leader, serve to educate. We agree with you, my friend. Whoever you are, we agree.
Yes, again, thank you so much for everyone who is interacting with us over the course of the show. That's basically our primary goal here, is to facilitate discussions that are applicable to people our own age, to people we can relate to, and to sort of elevate the voices within the LGBT community that may not be heard as always. Because for a lot of people, I know people who have had somewhat negative or conflicting experiences between their background, their culture, and of which religion can be a part, and coming to terms with a new identity or coming to terms with an identity they may not have been able to explore within those arenas. So to find out that we have people of faith who are also queer, who are reconciling these and uniting them in their identities, is more than encouraging. So thank you so much. We did talk before the break about bringing religion into the 21st century, and about how when we have movements like LGBTQ rights and the fight for equality and social justice, the role of that religion and culture and faith can play in these can be very variant. For many people, religion is about preserving tradition. It's about keeping rituals sacred. It's about keeping something the same. However, I think it's quite a misconception that people have for religion to be seen as a backward aspect of people's identities and personalities, how religion is sometimes seen as an oppressive force, which for many people, like, I know that Karl Marx definitely talked about religion being the opiate of the masses. However, we also need to acknowledge that while the LGBT community, for example, exists as a group of people coming together to acknowledge that there is inequality within the system because of sexual orientation and gender identity and such, we do not I would not like to think that any one of us thinks that there is one uniting LGBT experience or there is one kind of way to be LGBTQ+. There are many, many intersections, as I'm sure the guests on the show will agree. None of us are the same. None of us have had the same experiences because of LGBT. So when we are talking about religion, there is also such an intimate personal aspect of religion. It's about your faith, it's about what you believe to be true and how this affects you as a person, how you interact with the world and how you interact with yourself. So what I would also like to ask is, because religion is often seen to have a role in preserving tradition and ritual, and LGBT rights have often been at the forefront of overturning discriminatory law and practices, how do you feel about the notion that within religion there are within certain religions, I should argue, there is an argument for maintaining a sense of purity and not letting the times and culture affect the purity of the messages that we find in religions that we are taught. But at the same time, how do we keep religion accessible and relevant to people like us who have been, to an extent, ignored? I'm seeing a lot of hands go up in the studio and I'm going to just address all of them. So starting with Aviv.
Well, the first thing that springs to my mind is something which I've kind of been shown through a lot of my upbringing. I was always kind of taught that charity and social justice are kind of very, very Jewish in their nature. I mean, like my parents and I at my bat mitzvah, we had a little like a charity box to donate money to a charity called Children of Peace, which kind of works to build friendships between children on all the sides of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which is a really, really wonderful cause. It's a great charity, and in my youth group we were taught the kind of phrase, or I'm not sure if I could call it a proverb, it's kind of a phrase that is tzedek tzedek tirdof, I think in Hebrew. I'm really sorry if I've gotten that wrong, but it means justice justice you shall pursue, and it's always been kind of very important in Judaism. I mean, recently it was the Jewish festival Purim, and for those who don't know, like a crash course in Purim, to keep it is very, very simple, not take up too much time, basically a lady called Esther becomes queen, and there's a guy called Haman who's bad, wears a triangular hat, wants to kill the Jews. Esther's like, no, so he doesn't. That's a very, very simple thing. But she's a strong woman standing up for herself. So I think Judaism, even though I kind of like to see it in my mind as kind of the crotchety old grandpa of religions, because it's just been through so much and people like to see it as citizens wise, I think it is very progressive in many ways as well. And as a support for liberal Judaism, it's about kind of like taking it and adapting it to the modern day so it's still just as relevant. So that's a big part of it for me, just kind of pursuing social justice. And also coming from a background where a lot of my ancestors are refugees, my grandmother came to England on the kinder transport to flee the Nazis, her entire family perished in Auschwitz. On my grandpa's side, a lot of my ancestors came over from Russia to fleeing pogroms. I think ending human suffering and standing up for the rights of marginalized groups is very much a Jewish concept, because I just kind of feel it. It just kind of hits something very, very deep in me when I see people suffering.
Yeah, I think that religion, it plays very much a key role in marginalization. So religious marginalized groups with religious context, I think, is a massive part that plays in the identities that shape us today. And for people to ignore that, as Tuck may have commented earlier, for people to believe that religions are inherently oppressive, when in actual fact, it's mainly the people who are members of religious groups that have been persecuted throughout history. And that goes for Muslims, Jews, Christians, Hindus, and a whole wealth of other religions that we haven't even heard about. Again, I'm opening up the floor to let's go with Dan.
So I'm a very strong believer that Jesus himself was a radical, and he was I believe he came to earth 2000 years ago, he was making new laws and new rules and telling people to do things which were unheard of. For example, you may have heard of the story about the Good Samaritan, and the Samaritans were very hated. And so he was very much talking about ideas which people wouldn't have necessarily understood or have thought of before. And so I think that's something which Christians need to remember, and need to remember that the person they believe started the whole thing was progressive. So therefore, we should be progressive too. Also, it really annoys me when Christians believe that they have a right to exert their worldview on everyone else. For example, Christians protesting against same-sex marriage. I don't see any reason why Christians should enforce their worldview on secular people who do not in any way believe in that thing. So that's something else.
Sort of going back to a more traditional thing in terms of Christianity, I agree totally with everything that Dan said. But for me, it's a slightly different take on it. I took comfort in the fact when I was younger that the church hadn't changed much in terms of, you know, what they taught, this sort of loving, accepting Christian religion that I grew up with. I struggled when I was younger with issues around sexuality and mental health and that kind of thing. And I found that the constancy and tradition of Christianity and that kind of thing really, really comforting. I know that some people, when they go through that kind of thing, it seems to me either strengthens their connection with God or it breaks it completely. And for me, it very much strengthened it.
I forgot what I was gonna say.
It's okay, it's happened to us all.
I was just thinking about how I think that I really loved what was being said before about liberal Judaism, and I think that that's a lot of what a lot of Muslims are practicing now, but just not officially. I think that they're just trying to move forward and just reconcile everything that's changing. I think one of the main problems, I really didn't want to get into scripture and everything, because I think that's one of the things that people can just argue about for days without end. But even within the Muslim holy book itself, the Quran, for example, in Islam, alcohol is forbidden. But when this rule first came out, it was just that you shouldn't pray when you're drunk. And then it changed to you shouldn't drink. So even within the religion, there's that like progression. So I think that a mistake that a lot of Muslims have is thinking, you know, our book is perfect, nothing can change, nothing's allowed to change. If it changes, then the world is going to end. And I think it's just a case of, you know, but then even if you believe that the scripture is, you know, to be taken literally, you've got people around you. You really need to be elevating the voices of LGBT Muslims and people of faith and just hearing what they're saying, because we exist. We're always going to exist. We always have. There's a lot of gender and sexuality fluidity in ancient Arabic and I'm sure Persian literature and poetry. So you just, you know, just accept that we're here. Listen to us and let's find a way to... I think that the LGBT community, you know, in an ideal world, the LGBT community would stop seeing religion as attacking them, even though I do believe that it has, and also that the faith community would stop seeing, for example, same-sex marriage as being an attack on faith, because it's not, it's just something that's there. And it just reminded me of something really difficult that I went through during the Orlando vigil time. I was just scrolling through Instagram and I saw a post about it, and I saw a comment that said, I hope all Muslims die, and I felt really, really upset. But then I scrolled up to see what it was replying to, and it was somebody who'd written in Arabic, I hope all LGBT people die. And then the hurt like kind of reduced about the Muslim things. Then I thought, well, actually I understand that, which is really sad that I have to like split my identity into two bits and be like, well, I sympathise with that, even though what they've just said is that they hope, you know, me and all people like me would die. So yeah, I think just listening to people and trying to sympathise with them, because even if you might not agree, you know, their experiences are valid, and religion mostly teaches compassion before anything else. So
I think it's a responsibility on all of us to not be so reductionist in our view of human beings. Like, we shouldn't be seeing religion or any other aspects of our identity that we may hold dear to us as divisive factors within us. We should be seeing each other as whole people. And while I just want to bring back something that Ellie mentioned earlier about how perhaps the older generation in her church may not understand the LGBT lifestyle, air quotes. Just because you don't understand something doesn't mean you have to be malicious about it. And I think that we do need a little bit more understanding in this world, a little bit less division, a little less alienation, and just more, like you mentioned before, Tuck, a bit more reconciliation and more progression toward a more unified version. Sorry, I just had to say that. We have also had a message in saying, it's so good to hear positive points of view from various different religions. You guys are killing it. Thank you, anonymous messenger. It's nice to get some validation from the internet.
From what's been said in the studio over the last few minutes, I think it was Dan that said something about exerting a worldview. And that reminded me of something I read earlier from, it's in a piece from a scholar for progressive Islam. And so I'm aiming this at everyone in the studio, or you don't have to just, you know, think about it, you don't have to answer. It's sort of like a Q&A article. So the question was, doesn't the Quran say that homosexuality is unnatural? And the author answers, no, using words like natural and unnatural as ways to describe sexuality is something that was started by European Christians. When today's Muslims use this argument to say homosexuality is against Islam, they are actually borrowing ideas from European Christians. The conclusion that homosexuality is unnatural is not based on anything in the Quran. Again, the word homosexuality is never even used and does not exist in the Quran. So if anyone wants to reply to that, you know, it not just aimed at Islam, but or Christianity, you know, one ethnicity or religion trying to exert their worldview on the other, is that causing a lot of the divisions in religion? I think we had Aviv put your hand up first and then...
It was only tangentially related to the question, but it just occurred to me. It was a very interesting encounter I had recently. There's a rabbi I know, and me and a couple of friends were hanging out at his house, and weirdly enough, we were watching the Teletubbies, and the Teletubbies is basically a part of my lifeblood. My mum is
iconic
listening.
British culture at
Thank
its
you.
Finest.
My mum is listening to this right now. Hi, mum! And she worked just a background, she worked at the BBC when she was pregnant with me, and every morning they would have the Teletubbies on. And I think that explains why I was exposed to copious amounts of the Teletubbies in utero, which explains why I was so passionate about it. So me, an Orthodox rabbi, and a couple of my Jewish friends, we were having a discussion about Teletubby biology, because they have so many different shapes of antenna. We were wondering if they were like slime molds and possibly only had thousands of sexes. And then we were wondering if Teletubbies had kind of Western gender binary concepts of gender. And it became quite an interesting discussion. And the rabbi, he'd never heard of the concept of non-binary gender before, so I explained to him what it was, and I myself am a non-binary person. I wasn't out to him, even though we like do know each other quite well. And he said something quite interesting, and if anyone listening right now knows where this came from, because I'm quite interested to know personally, he said that there was a bit of the Talmud, and for those who don't know, the Talmud is basically it's these really hefty volumes of the Jewish oral law, and a big thing in Judaism is waiting for the Messiah to come. And the rabbi, he said something like, before the Messiah comes, there'll be this androgyny. And I thought that was very interesting. So if anyone knows anything about that, please text it in or message it in, because I thought that was really interesting and shows how religion is often more progressive about gender than we would think. So, yeah.
Anything else from anyone that we had? We had Ellie.
I mean, I have a friend who's Christian, who I'm not out to for the reason that he is very homophobic. And he says he has used the word unnatural before when describing homosexuality, and he's very much kind of, there are men and there are women, and they are the only people who can get married, and he says everything else is unnatural, and he uses Adam and Eve as a justification. So he says the world started with a man and a woman, and that's kind of how it should be, even though, as I've said before, Adam and Eve was Old Testament, so it's kind of not the best way to form your arguments if you're a Christian to use that.
Plus, not all Christians assigned to creationism.
They are
different concepts. But continue. Sorry.
Yeah. No. It's so he sees everything else as unnatural, and whenever I try and ask him about it, he always goes with the Adam and Eve line, and he never sort of deviates from that, even though I tried to explain very, very briefly about non-binary people and about people of other sexualities. And then he started going into like conversion therapy, and then I just had to end the conversation.
Don't blame you.
That sounds hard.
Sorry, go ahead.
Like I said before, I didn't really want to get into scripture, but just since you mentioned it, it's true that there's no word for homosexuality in the Quran, so definitely it's not that big of a deal in religion, because if there was, then there would be a whole like chapter about it or whatever. But just for the sake of being transparent, there is still the verse that says, would you sleep with a man rather than a woman? And that's aimed at men. So it is there, but let's just remember that throughout the years, Quran has always been interpreted by men, and obviously heteronormativity really does serve patriarchy, so you have to question, you know, why have things been interpreted the way that they have? And obviously the Quran was originally in what can be compared to Shakespearean English, but in Arabic, so there's been a lot of like translation as it went along, so even that way of interpretation, just like anything else in the Quran, it can be argued, can be interpreted differently. So it's not concrete, but like I said, there's no word for homosexuality. It can't be that big of a deal to God.
Absolutely. And just to come back on that, there isn't a word for homosexuality, but there is a word for it to describe men who are not in need of a woman. And whether or not that's described as a bad thing, I won't go into that. But so the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he had a friend who fit that description. Yeah, am I right in saying that? Correct me if I'm wrong, because this is just from what I've read.
Housemaid guy.
Yeah.
Boy,
and so he was sort of allowed in her private company. And you'd imagine that if he was sort of a mutual friend of the Prophet Muhammad, maybe this is being misinterpreted and mistranslated. As you said, a lot of it is being lost in translation between languages and over the generations. And I suppose that counts for quite a lot of religions as well, doesn't it? I know Christianity and the translation from Hebrew, some has been lost. Ibi just wants to contribute something.
I think something that was particularly pertinent to where you actually started off this question, Will, and that was touched on wonderfully by all of our panellists, is we often forget where these particular religious scriptures, not the scriptures themselves, but the interpretations of the scriptures come from and the power structures therein. And of course, today on our panel, we've been very coherent and we've been very careful to focus on personal religious experiences. I do want to point out to our listeners and to our panelists as well, bit of a shameless plug, we will be doing a later episode next term, so after the Easter holidays, we will be doing an episode on the role of colonialism and the history of LGBT, and some of the things that we've actually discussed today with regards to the way religion has been misappropriated and misinterpreted sometimes also comes with that aspect of history. It's not just theological, and I'm only pointing that out because that's a whole discussion in and of itself, and we will be touching on that as well. But thank you to everyone who's actually brought that up today anyway.
That was a wonderful discussion that we've just had. That's a wonderful message. We've just had a message come in. Mayday, mayday. We've had a message come in saying, remember the society that these texts were written in was patriarchal and heteronormative. They wouldn't have challenged the status quo. These religions wanted to grow, not scare people away. And so religion would have enforced current social expectations and rules. I think that's a really valid point, because for a lot of people, it's very easy to deem a religion or a belief as inherently sexist or inherently misogynistic or inherently LGBT phobic, when in reality it's just reflecting the beliefs and societies, the beliefs and practices of the societies in which they existed and in which they continue to exist. If you think of religion or a belief system as the lens through which we perceive the world, like for many people, philosophy and religion were the ways through which they learned about things, how they thought of natural science, how they thought of social rules and how people were meant to live, how people were meant to morally govern their lives. There are, as we know from the Old Testament, there are laws on how many things should be done in a certain way, and there are just ways and rules that people used to govern the lives that they lived. Although, bearing in mind, these are all, we do have representation of the main three monotheistic religions in here, but we do also have, there are other religions and other belief systems like Buddhism and Hinduism that reflect similar practices. It's about wanting to know more, because no one is really sure of anything in their lives. It's really useful and comforting, like Ellie said before, or at least it can be, for many people, specifically marginalized people who have been left behind. At least. So, just as I know we're running out of time, does anyone have any final thoughts before we wrap up? Aviv?
This point was raised quite a while ago, but and I think it was you that was saying about how, like, there is actually a lot of diversity in terms of LGBTQ plus experience. And I just want to say that I think that's an absolutely beautiful thing. Like, every day I see a lot of people, because people constantly make memes about, oh, there's only two genders or all that stuff, or people saying, oh, this can't be a thing because it's such a new term. But I think that's quite silly, because at the end of the day, all words are made up, and why should we suppress human diversity? Because we live very, very short lives. Why not celebrate all that other humans have to offer and show us? And language is such a beautiful thing. Why would we prevent it from evolving? You know, I've just never understood why people are just so against watching the world evolve and flourish before us when there are so many different people. I mean, the world doesn't all revolve around us as people. There are so many others out there who could give us so much.
That's great, thank you. And just before we do go into our last song, I just want to make one final comment based on, I think it was something that Ibby said, that religions, when they were, you know, written or created or whatever, were just a reflection of culture at the time. And that we had someone texting about, so of course it's patriarchal and heteronormative, but of course that's not, you know, strictly true. So Hinduism, that isn't as heteronormative and patriarchal. So you had gender-fluid deities, and of course you have the third gender in Hinduism, which I think is called Hijra. Am I pronouncing that right? Sorry, Ellie.
Just to clarify, that's not just in Hinduism, that's also in South Asian Islam. So the third gender is actually recognised. It has a more intersectional understanding across religions. It's more a regional thing.
Okay, that's great. Thank you for that clarification. So again, I think that just further goes to prove that it is just a lot of religion is just... It is as it is because that's how it was at the time. So maybe that's almost as good a reason as any for religion to evolve over time and, you know, get into the 21st century. And I think I will leave it at that. Donnie, do you have one last thing to say?
I just wanted to say, despite not being a voice on the panel today, I've much enjoyed the discussion. Thank you for all of you who have been sending messages out there, and particularly to Aviv's dad. Hi, we did get your message. And it wasn't that embarrassing. We loved it. And for all of you out there, I think this is a goodbye from us now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ant, for hosting this show.
Thank you, all of you, for coming in and joining us. We've had many messages talking about how there's a lot of optimism, it seems, from you guys listening. Thank you so much.